This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckabee. Thanks so much for listening. A leaky ship of state, says the president. Is the ship going down?
Papers are being leaked. Things are being leaked. It's criminal action, criminal act. And it's been going on for a long time before me. But now it's really going on. And people are trying to cover up for a terrible loss that the Democrats had under Hillary Clinton. I think it's very, very unfair what's happened to General Flynn, the way he was treated, and the documents and papers that were illegally, I stress that, illegally leaked.
President Trump does some public bailing when asked about the Mike Flynn scandal, with visiting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu standing by. The Trump performance seemed to alarm even the cool conservative Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee.
I don't want to get hysterical about this all of a sudden and throwing out. I mean, I think we've got an issue that's real. It's important to our nation. I think we all need it in a sober way, regardless of party, figure out a way to not cause there to be this huge distrust of what may be happening here in our country relative to a country that is not our friend.
Senator Corker calling for sobriety in a conversation with Todd Zwillick. He certainly is old enough to remember the chaotic days of erratic Russian leader Boris Yeltsin during the 1990s. How might Russia have moved events along in the General Flynn fiasco? Does the content of intercepted calls between Trump aides and Russian intelligence officials during the campaign represent a deliberate effort to create mischief? Meanwhile, there does seem to be a degree of Russian reveling in all this. The deployment of a cruise missile earlier this week and what's being described as the loitering of a Russian spy ship 30 miles off the coast of Connecticut. How is all this being reported inside Russia? Charles Maines is a longtime independent radio producer and reporter based in Moscow. Charles, welcome.
Good to be with you.
So how much fun is the Russian media having with this story, just before we get into the facts?
Well, you know, the Russian media has essentially talked about, you know, all these allegations that have come over the past months about the Trump campaign and Russian contacts. And, you know, in a way, the Russian position hasn't really ever changed. They've said that they've had nothing to do with it. All the hacking story they've denied. And certainly they've denied these last allegations by the New York Times that the Trump campaign was actively in cahoots with the Russian government.
And was there any coverage of the Flynn resignation and, you know, who he is, you know, his potential relationship with the folks inside Russia?
Well, there's been some coverage. I have to say that initially when the news broke, it wasn't covered by some of the main channels here like State Channel 1. But it was certainly, you know, Flynn is well known to RT, for example, Russia Today, where he is an often guest there. So there was some coverage there. And I think just generally speaking, there's a sense that General Flynn was an ally. He was someone within the Trump camp that was pushing for better relations with Russia, something that the president has also said. And so I think there's a sense that, they lost one of their own.
You know, the evolution of Russia post-Soviet, you really had a period of time where, you know, Russia in the West was viewed as something of a basket case. And the Putin years have really been a period of extreme stability. If you look at the United States, it would seem as though Russians on the street can look at Washington and possibly chuckle a little bit about their own experience.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. Certainly, I think they look at what's happening in the U.S. and they see, basically chaos coming out of the White House. But it's not all good for the Russians in the sense that certainly on the government level, they look at, you know, conflicting signals in terms of what the Trump administration wants to do relative to Russia. Candidate Trump often said he wanted better relations. He suggested that maybe he was interested in removing sanctions that were imposed on Russia over the Ukraine issue and over Crimea. Well, then you get to his administration and suddenly some of his key cabinet posts, including Nikki Haley at the UN, saying that essentially linking sanctions relief to the return of Crimea to Ukraine, which is a non-starter issue for the Russians. Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, is meeting with Rex Tillerson today in Bonn for the first time. And you know, maybe they'll be able to straighten some of these things out. But certainly, I think that they're learning that the Trump, certainly President Trump, is a chaotic figure. If anything, I think Vladimir Putin, for all the stability he brings to Russian politics at home. He's often been the guy on the international stage who's unpredictable, and he uses that to his advantage. Well, now Trump is using that same technique. Nobody quite knows what he really stands for. During the presidential campaign, candidate Trump was often promoted in the Russian media as kind of this, you know, hero for the working class, an honest broker, a real true honest politician, whereas Hillary Clinton was sort of hopelessly corrupt. And, you know, I think now they're starting to get this kind of buyer's remorse with Trump. There's been just a few columns in some of the main dailies here saying, you know, this guy is so unstable that it just doesn't make sense to hitch Russian policy to him. We just should chart our own course and hope that we can, you know, cooperate where we can.
Do Russian reporters and people on the street use the O word in describing Donald Trump, oligarch?
No, I think they look at him as a successful businessman. I think they look more to the aspirational parts of Donald Trump. Certainly also in the media, they celebrate his virility, you know, the hands and everything like that. So I think that, you know, Trump, to a certain degree, appeals to Russians as kind of a colorful guy. But he is reminiscent in some ways of some of the sort of business guys from the 90s, the oligarchs, as you say. So in some ways, he represents this sort of, you know, older 90s Russian form of business, you know, constantly trading, constantly moving up the ladder. So I think, though, that they're more intrigued by him than repulsed.
And what about the leaks, the sources of leaks coming out of the conversations between Flynn and Russian officials? Could they have a Russian source, Russian translators, people who have it in for Donald Trump, or at least for Mike Flynn?
Well, I suppose anything's possible. We still don't know what was actually said during these conversations. I haven't seen the transcripts. But I think it's worth pointing out that the Russian ambassador in Washington certainly is aware that he's being wiretapped. He's not a dummy. So, you know, I think that Kislyak, the Russian ambassador in D.C., was, I imagine, quite sort of holding his tongue during these talks, is the impression you have, because Russians are well-trained in this sense. So it's hard for me to imagine that the leaks came from this side. It sounds to me like, you know, the story adds up in this sense with what the security services in the U.S. are leaking to the media, that it's standard practice to wiretap foreign nationals, particularly in government, and certainly the Russians. And Flynn got caught.
I suppose in the old Soviet days, and there was some of this during Watergate, when Nixon was, first viewed as this hugely powerful leader, you know, capable of almost anything during the Vietnam period, and then Watergate, you know, unraveled him completely. This was a opportune moment for the Soviets to, you know, display, you know, hydrogen bombs and, you know, parades in the street and all sorts of military prowess. Is there signs of, you know, Russian mobilization or showing off of military capability, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, the Russians are being accused of, you know, essentially breaking this Cold War era missile treaty, although that they've denied this. This is a report that came out in the New York Times the other day. They say that nothing like this exists and they're abiding by all their international requirements. I do think you see certainly the Russians aware of the expansion into Eastern Europe by NATO. I think they're really unnerved by, in particular, the presence of rotating forces, including U.S. troops, into Eastern Europe as sort of a sense of support to some of the Baltic states and some of the Eastern European countries on Russia's flank. So I think that there is certainly a sense that even today, Mr. Putin made some announcements that essentially NATO was trying to contain Russia, and this was the primary threat that the Russians faced. So I think in some ways you have this certain buildup, and Vladimir Putin has been working at that for several years now. He's moved away from a very ineffectual contract army to something much more professional. They've got special forces that showed that they were quite capable in Crimea in particular, and also in Syria with some of the air campaign that they launched there. So I think you've seen just a general kind of buildup in militancy, and that also extends, I might add, to the Arctic.
The treaty violation that you referred to is this alleged deployment of a cruise missile. The Russians are denying that?
That's right. They say that formally they haven't been accused of violating the treaty, but that Russia remains committed to all its international commitments, including the treaty in question.
So a Russian spy ship loitering off the coast of Connecticut is also being denied.
That's right. You know, the Russians, I mean, over the past several years, John, we've seen a lot of cases where, for example, Russian jets have been flying with their transponders off into the Black Sea, basically brushing over NATO forces, NATO ships in both the Baltic area, Baltic Sea, also in the Black Sea. So a lot of quite provocative behavior, but usually standard practice is to say that nothing occurred.
Generally, it was believed here in the United States that Putin preferred Donald Trump to any of the other characters who were running for office, including Hillary Clinton. Is there any sense of be careful what you wish for there in Moscow these days?
I think there is. I think there's just a little sense of buyer's remorse. You rightfully point out that they certainly were receptive to the message that was coming from candidate Trump, that he wanted better relations with Russia. Certainly, there's this personal animosity that President Putin has for Hillary Clinton. He blames her for a series of protests, mass street protests that broke out after the parliamentary elections here in 2011, saying that she gave the, quote, signal to essentially the opposition to rally people and Russians against Putin on the streets of Moscow and other cities. So I mean, there was that all along. At the same time, now we have this kind of very impulsive figure in the White House. And I think the Russians are trying to figure out what exactly he stands for, like everybody else.
Charles Maines, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Hey, thank you, John.
Charles Maines is an independent radio producer and reporter based in Moscow.